the seven sacred teachings, the seven sacred laws, or the seven grandfather teachings. The names vary, but these are the guiding principles for many indigenous nations that help us lead Miopi Matisiwin, a good life. The teachings are love, humility, courage, wisdom, honesty, respect, and truth. Odawa Ojibwe elder Edna Menituwabi says following these sacred teachings guides her on the red road.
It's a beautiful road. A red road that was given to us by the Creator. It's our healing. It's our transformation. It's coming home. That's the way I refer to it. We are coming home to who we are, what was originally given to us as a people. And we have to wear it. I didn't understand it when I heard it in my youth. They said, put it on, wear it. And it's only in my old age that I begin to understand that you wear those teachings, you embrace those teachings, and it is your life. That's who you are, and that's what you wear. And to be able to pass that on to the young generation, the next generation.
Danse, Anine, Buju, hello and welcome to a new season of Unreserved. I'm Rosanna Deerchild. We're kicking things off this season with the first of an occasional series. Sacred Seven will explore the seven sacred teachings. We'll meet Indigenous people who are taking those teachings and putting them into action. Today, the eagle.
So today we are on a walk with our eyes and ears open, looking for megazae, or those eagles, those bald eagles.
Alan Cawley invites city dwellers to tread softly along Toronto's Humber River, where after many years of absence, eagles have returned.
That's my golden eagle, that's my bald eagle.
And traditional harvester Stan Kipling shows us how he makes ceremonial items to help share the teachings the eagle carries.
The eagle teaches us about love, how to love all things in life, how to love ourselves. Because once we learn to love ourselves the way the eagle teaches us, then we can help others. Then we can start loving and healing others with that love that we carry now.
Plus, Elder Edna Manituwabi shares how the eagle's teachings remind her of her responsibility to future generations.
When you see an eagle, it is a blessing. And I'm reminded, yes, I did offer my tobacco. Yes, I'm still working with medicines. Yes, I'm still raising my children in a good way. I'm still celebrating my great-grandchildren.
Today, the first of our seven episodes on the Sacred Seven. Guiding us there with love is the eagle.
I was in quite a traumatic state in my life at one time. And I traveled the land with my daughter. We just drove. And I just wanted to see the different power places of the land, of the earth. And so we came through Montana, the hills of Montana. And she said, Mom, there's two hawks, but I think they're eagles. Stop. And so we stopped, and we slowly backed up, and we held our tobacco, and we're standing right in the middle on the shoulder of the highway and on the fence post were these two golden eagles. And as we were holding our tobacco, there was a streak of lightning in the middle, in the sky up on the hill of the mountains, and those two majestic birds lofted at the same time. Talk about synchronicity. And as they lofted, their wingspan was so wide that the sound whoosh, 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 whoosh. And I could feel the energy from the balls of my feet surging all the way up. What an incredible, beautiful. I hung on to that for a long time. It was the energy. It has to do with energy. I felt so, so blessed. And a lot of that sorrow that I was carrying at that time, the grief and the sadness, was lifted by those wings.
That's Edna Manituabi sharing a story that illustrates one of the Eagle's teachings, love. Today's episode is all about this sacred bird that carries our prayers to the Creator and inspires us to live a better life. We'll hear more from Edna a little later in the show, but first, join me on a curious walk into Stan Kipling's backyard. From the outside, Stan's home looks like the others on this residential street in Winnipeg. That is, until you go through the gate to find a row of buffalo skulls hung neatly along the back fence.
Those ones I took, that's what the color they are when they come out of the soil.
Okay.
Brown. All right, yeah. And then leave them out in the sun, they'll get a little whiter. So we can go down.
Make your way down the stairs to his basement suite, and it's a whole other sight to behold. Stan is an elder and an educator. He shares his knowledge of traditional animal harvesting with anyone who's hungry for it. And Stan? Well, he's always hungry for muskrat. It's a taste he developed growing up on the trap line, which partly explains his tremendous collection.
Well, this is just my living and working space. So I have a little area here where I sit and watch TV sometimes while I'm working on things, just to have noise in the background. And then all around me, I like to keep my my animals, hanging up in containers. Once I've cleaned them up enough to be put in containers, I'll lay them out all over the place. And I know I've had other elders, other cultural people come in here and they say, how do you live with all these spirits? Because we believe that there's a spirit an energy connected to everything. So all my animal skulls all have an energy, all have a form of spirit, you know, that if we're taught in the right way, we know how to access those spirits for ceremony, for healing. This is what I do all the time. I just sit and work on my sacred and spiritual items.
Could you just tell me about some of the animals that we are surrounded by here in your little basement studio, kitchen, bedroom, living room, place?
Well, I have a lot of bear items. I got bear skins, bear skulls. I must have about probably 40 or 50 bear skulls of different sizes just because I've been collecting them for so long. I'm from the bear clan, so anything with a bear on it, I just love that, and I like to have them around me. And the bison skulls are, you know, I've gotten quite a few over the last few years just by somebody connecting me with a few bison ranchers. And then I met the guy who does the shooting and the butchering of the animals. And so he connects me up. And I often take out a bunch of my scabies and teach them how to skin an animal, how to cut it up. And then I have a lot of, like, eagles I find that have been electrocuted in the fall. I'll gather them up. I'll make eagle whistles. I'll make eagle wing fans for other elders, other cultural people. The eagle whistles are really sought after at Sundance time, so I get a lot of requests. So I'll have a few of those. I was making those before you guys came. I got them soaking, and I'll clean them up and then start making things. And then I have, what else I have around here? I have all kinds of skulls. Because of the, I got trapper friends who live in the north, and they'll save the skulls for me, and they'll save the muskrat meat and the beaver meat, and I eat all those. So that's what I eat all year round. I'll eat muskrat and beaver, my favorite things. I got lots of feathers, like probably 1,000 eagle feathers in containers. Some elders will bring me their old beat-up eagle feathers to repair, because when you use them in ceremony for a long time, they get dried out. And a lot of them have lost or never had the knowledge how to take care of those things. So I fix them up, bring them back to life for them, or repair whatever they need, and I'll send them back on their way. And then, I find owls on the highway, which are, to me, really valuable items to find. Hawks, I find those. Porcupine skulls, porcupine needles. I got jars full of those things. I'll go do teachings when I find one that's in good shape and not too smelly. I'll take it somewhere and I'll just post on my Facebook that, you know, I got this. Anybody want to learn how to take care of a porcupine? Because porcupine is a medicine animal like the bear is a medicine animal. And I have so much of that knowledge that I've carried since a young man and only now starting to share it in my older age. And before, I wouldn't even share it. Like, I had friends who I grew up with who didn't know about the knowledge I carried because I consider myself a humble man. Even if I do know how, they have to ask me first to show them or to help them or to teach them before I would do anything, right? Even the smallest little bird I find that has a purpose. I can make little skull earrings out of those little skulls. Yeah, and the feathers, the small little wing things, the kids just love those little things. They gather them up. So now I want them to look at when they see a dead animal or something, it has another purpose instead of just letting it waste away or get crushed.
Yeah. Today we're here to learn about the eagle. What makes the eagle special to Indigenous people?
So that eagle, he has that vision. A lot of people know it about the love of the seven sacred teachings, or, you know, are the sacred laws or the grandmother or the grandfather teachings, that eagle represents that love aspect. But that eagle also has medicine. It carries medicine, right? The fat on an eagle can be used also for grease, right? You can make eagle grease out of that for healing purposes. The eyes we use for medicine, we dry them up. The heart, the kidneys, the lungs, the liver, everything can be accessed if you know how to process them, how to use those things. But the eagle also, you know, he flies so high. He flies next to Creator, right? And we consider that eagle to be the king of the physical world, whereas the thunderbird is the king of the spiritual world. So when there's a death, that eagle will carry that message to Creator, that somebody is coming into the spirit world now, coming to join the Creator. But that eagle also carries our messages, right? When we pray, we put our tobacco out and we ask for guidance or we ask for something. And in the old days, you know, to get an eagle feather, an eagle wing fan was very sacred. It had a lot of meaning to it. So when somebody carries that eagle feather, that means that you got to speak with truth and honesty now and be humble, right? And all our teachings are interconnected in some way. And a lot of people think that they just stand alone, but they don't. That love that the eagle represents, all the other animals have that love too. They carry that love for mankind. And we should in return love each other, love the animals, love nature, and treat it with respect, love, and care, right? And a lot of us have forgotten those teachings and we don't live that way anymore. So it's really important that we follow those seven sacred teachings. We have to carry that. But a lot of us don't do that anymore. And so we got to live that good life. And the eagle, the bones in the eagle, we use those for eagle whistles and that arm bone. And we, so we can call in that eagle in ceremonies. We call in our spirits in the sweat lodge when we blow that eagle whistle, right? And we carry that in our ceremonies. And even the claws, you know, the skull, we can make eagle staffs, you know, and dance sticks for powwow people. But to me, it's really important that people respect those things and not just, I guess, live that life for a short period when you're at a ceremony, at a sundance, but when you leave that, that you carry that knowledge, that wisdom, that love and respect for everybody. Like, just don't take it to the lodge and leave it there. And for me, working with the animals the way I do is really good for people who are traumatized to set, you know, and listen to the teachings while we're working with the animals. And what that working with that animal represents, because then we're relaxing, we're connecting to nature, we're connecting to our animals, our spirit animals, our guides. All that power sets there, and we just have to take the time to set with it.
When did you first feel a connection to eagle?
Oh, and as a young man, you know, you look up in the sky and you see how beautiful that bird is, and you hear that call. You know, and you can learn to recognize that call as you're walking through the bush and you know that eagle call. You know there's an eagle somewhere, right? around. He's probably watching you and you don't see him yet. So as a young man, like, I connected to those animals around 9 years old when I was working the trap line with my dad. So that's, and that was all winter work. So winter is my favorite. I still have memories of my dad, like, going out on the trap line because, you know, my dad struggled with alcohol. So when he was good and he was on the trap line, I would go with him. And when he was off somewhere, you know, drinking, I would go on the trap line because somebody had to check traps, right? And that's when I started working with animals, learning how to skin them and enjoying how to eat that muskrat tail, the beaver tail, those things that a lot of people don't eat anymore, right? I run into people who say, yeah, my grandparents, I remember them eating muskrat, but I've never eaten anything like that. And I said, man, it's the best. It's the best. And then after I eat, oh, I'm talking about the eagle, eh?
Yeah. Back to the eagle.
Back to the eagle. So, and then as I got older, I started coming across more and more eagles that I found under power lines. And then when I started processing them, I would take pictures of the burn marks to show, like, conservation about all those things. Like, this is how I found it. This is what. And so that's the eagle. And I know every part of that eagle you can cut. And then now I just go around to medicine camps in the summer, and I teach people how to process that eagle, how to cut them. Like, there's a certain way we cut them. We have an eagle feast to honor that eagle before we start. So we'll put together foods that the eagle eats, right? You got your fish, you got your muskrat, you got beaver. Yeah, so we put together everything like that, pickerel, and we eat. We'll have a meal, right? There's other things we'll put in there with berries and things as well, but we feast the eagle, we call it. And I've had people ask me, you know, when I talk about feasting the eagle, you know, having an eagle feast, they had assumed we eat that eagle. And I said, that eagle is pretty fishy to eat him. I said, so we don't eat the eagle. We just have a meal in honor of him, and we have some of the items that the eagle likes to eat. So we'll make sure to include that, and we'll put a plate out, you know, on the land. And then we'll also, when I process that eagle for other people, there's parts that they don't want or won't use. Then we wrap that eagle in a red cloth with some medicines, you know, tobacco, cedar, sage, sweetgrass. And then I'll go bury it in the forest somewhere, put it out. And but then, even sometimes if it's near where I live, I'll go back a year later and look for that eagle bones, and I'll take those little eagle ribs and I'll make earrings. I'll take the vertebrae and make little earrings. Everything has a use. Like, everything that's left there, I'll go gather up and I'll use again, right?
Why is it important to be respectful in that way, to have the feast for the eagle, to, you know, to bury the unused parts in a respectful way in a red cloth with medicines?
Well, it's our belief that if you don't respect that animal like that, your wishes, the use you have for it, it won't work. You lose the whole purpose if you're not respecting the animals that you're working with, right? If you treat it as garbage and just throw it away, like, that's one of the major things I tell when I'm working with students or working with other people, teach them how to do these things. I said, nothing is garbage. Never throw anything in the garbage. Everything has to go back to the land. Even the smallest little feather, everything goes back. A piece of little meat, I said, everything has to be scraped and taken back to the land. I said, otherwise, you're losing all purpose. The same when we're making medicines. Like, if we don't give thanks and prayer all the time as we're doing this work, we're losing that purpose. We don't have that energy. We're not showing the respect, and we're not going to get that respect or that healing back. And it goes back to that old teaching, too, of never take anything without giving something back. So I'm taking things off that eagle, and I'm giving back my respect, my prayer, my thanks. At the same time, I'm asking for guidance, for healing. Can I use you in teaching? Can I use you in ceremony? Can I pass you on to another elder? Can I pass you on to a sun dancer? So all those things, as I'm working, I'm talking, you know, talking to them, talking to myself.
You said that you've had this knowledge for a long time, even as a young man. Who taught you how to do this work?
The work with the animals, how to process them, was my father. But I had an uncle who was a Sundance chief. I had my grandfather would teach me stories. So I used to hear little stories as a young man from my grandparents, you know, and also hear the language. But they wouldn't speak it to me because I myself, being a day school survivor, you know, I never heard the language too much. But I would listen to those old men in the evening and sit with them, and they would tell stories. And then, just anytime I want to do something I can't remember how to do it, I just sit and meditate, and then those things come to me. You know, I remember my dad doing this, or I remember uncle doing this, or I remember somebody else doing it this way.
When did you feel called to return to those traditional methods? Did you have a moment, or did you sort of go back to it slowly?
Well, I always work with the animals. I just didn't always share that knowledge, right? And it was just the pressure or suggestions from the elders who would come to see me to get sacred items or to help them with something. They would have dreams about having so many bear claw necklaces for ceremony, and they'd contact me and say, do you have this? Can you make this? And I'd say, yeah, I'd have that. And then they'd come over and they'd ask me, you know, you should start sharing or teaching more. One time I got invited to a dark room ceremony with seven different elders there. And they said, we want you to sit and listen to us. And I said, okay. So I went in there and I sat. They all smoked their pipe. And then each one of them told me what was prophesied for me. And these were teachings that I was told long ago that I was supposed to be like a medicine man, a healer. I was supposed to have a certain color pipe. I'm supposed to start doing these things. And then I told them, well, you know what? I'm not confident. I'm afraid. I'm scared. I don't like talking to people. And then their suggestion was, you know, we all started like that. We all feel like that when we started. And they said, but you got to start because all the knowledge you carry, it's going to be lost because you're not sharing that knowledge. Like, a lot of us don't know the things that you know about working with animals and all those ceremonies, the old ways. They said, we don't know those things. You know, we have to relearn them, and you carry that knowledge. And so I said, I'll try. So slowly I tried and tried, and then it got easier over time.
Wow, that's very powerful. You had said that you teach young people, and you really enjoy teaching young people about the parts of the animal and to use all of the animal and how to traditionally harvest it. Why is it important for you to teach another generation of young people about this?
I like to do teaching with the young people to help them understand how important these animals are to us in the past, how important they are to some of us still today, and how they should be treated in a respectful way, you know. I try to help them understand that energy that they carry, that power that they can carry even in death. Like, even when we see them flying, it's so beautiful, and we have our ceremonies, they circle. I said, but also, like, we can access all that energy, that power, that beauty, even after death, if we know how to access that. And I also, that tactical feeling, I like to get them to hold on to it, to touch it, you know, to like even the eagle skulls, when I preserve them with the feathers on them, I get them to pet it like their cat or your dog. I said, this is how you pet it. You know, I explained to them, never backwards, because you're going to break the feathers. You always pet it like you pet your animal. And you feel that, how beautiful it still is, even in death. And so you can see it. And just to see their eyes grow big. And you see that joy in that, right? And I explained to them, when our elders are having ceremony and they lay out their bundle and they put these out, no one should ever touch them. I said, don't even ask permission to touch them. I said, because these are sacred. We've used them in ceremony. And every time we use them in ceremony, they're gathering more power, more energy. I said, so you have to leave them. But now, because I haven't used anything in ceremony, I want you to hold them. I want you to see how special they are, right? And so that's the purpose, so that they can put their hands on them. They can know that our ceremonies, our way of life, our way of doing things is so beautiful. It's so special. And I tell them, people come from all over the world to hear about our teachings, to watch our way of life. They try to live that way nowadays, I said. So it's really important that I pass this knowledge on, even in a little way. Even if you just keep one thing, you know, there's something here that you see you like. And also, now they don't look at that dead deer on the highway is just a piece of them, or they see a hawk or an owl, you know, I said, you give old Stan a call, I'll come and pick it up.
Especially if it's a muskrat.
Muskrat.
Thank you so much for your teachings and your wisdom today, Stan.
Thank you so much for coming to listen to me.
Stan Kipling is an elder, educator, and a traditional harvester of animals and plants. He is from the Broken Head First Nation and lives and teaches in Winnipeg. Got any muskrat to eat?
Actually, I ate my last muskrat about a month ago.
Oh. I haven't had muskrat in a long time.
Well, you've had it?
Oh, yeah, I'm Cree. Of course I've had it. This is Unreserved on CBC Radio 1, Sirius XM, U.S. Public Radio, and Native Voice 1. I'm Rosanna Deerchild. Today, our occasional series, Sacred Seven. The first teaching we're learning about is love, represented by the majestic eagle. Ceremony lodges are one place to learn about these indigenous ways of being. Elder Edna Manitouwambi is the head woman for the eastern doorway of the Three Fires Madewiwin Lodge. The Three Fires is a confederacy made up of the Odawa, Ojibwe, and Potawatomi. Edna says this gracious bird is so revered because of what the eagle does for us.
There was a time when our people had forgotten our ways, and they'd forgotten how to keep the fire going, how to offer tobacco, how to make offerings. They had become lethargic, I guess. They didn't practice these teachings anymore. The Creator was going to show them that they had to find a way to cleanse their lives, I guess. And he was going to send either a flood or fire or something that was going to let the people know that they had to find a way to clean up their lives. And it was the eagle that intervened and asked the Creator, please don't do that. There are those still who remember, who are still following your original instructions. And so at that dawn, when it was supposed to happen, the eagle is the one that flew at that crack of dawn to intercede and told the Creator, there are still those who are offering their tobacco. I still see, when I fly about creation, I still see those ones who are offering their tobacco, who are doing something to keep moving, to keep doing that good work. And so even today, we acknowledge the eagle for giving us that blessing and interceding on our behalf.
Elder Edna Manitouwambi is Odawa and Ojibwe from Wikwimikong on Manitoulin Island. She'll be back again later to tell us why these sacred teachings were first gifted to women. For now, we head to southern Ontario, where bald eagles are making a comeback. Mostly due to DDT and hunting, eagles were a species of concern on the province's endangered species list for 50 years. But sightings are up. Over the last few years, they've even been spotted in Toronto. That's where Alan Colley has been watching them over the urban canopy along the Humber River.
This is like the original riverbed.
Okay.
Here.
Growing up in the city, he never saw the great raptors known as Migizi in Anishinaabe Moan. But he says recent conservation efforts based in community and indigenous knowledge are bringing more biodiversity to the area. Now he is passionate about getting city folk outdoors to experience the natural world through his company, living wild in the city.
So we are about, I'd say, 20 feet away from Toronto's largest watershed, which is the Humber River, or the Cobequunk ZB. The Humber River, as we look out, is a beautiful sight to be, because really when we think about this water, it's talking about life and just how we share that energy and connect to all of creation around us. And so as we look out, you can see the course of the water flowing through, and that shimmer and sparkle as it kind of makes its way, but also you can hear the sounds of the whole river shed itself sharing with us just an orchestra of beautiful sounds. Ani, Bojo, Chichok and Adishnikaz, Mayinginodem, Toronto Dungy. And so my spirit name is Chichok, and I'm Wolf Clan. And so I was born and raised here in Toronto. And so my ancestors are Ojibwe, Blackfoot Cree, Scottish, Irish, Russian, British, and French. Maybe a couple others along the way as well. So today we are on a walk with our eyes and ears open, looking for Megazae, or those eagles, those bald eagles. And so the Humber River is a very beautiful natural space, and so it does host a lot of life. And so recently, over the years, eagles have been spotted traveling through the watershed. And so normally they're here in the early spring, and they're here in the late fall as they're working their way between north and south. But there has been a few residents that have been staying around, and so hopefully we will keep our eyes, but also our ears open, because sometimes those eagles are so high up that they're hard to see, but we're still able to hear them.
All right, well, let's go on an adventure to find some eagles.
Perfect. All right, let's go for a walk.
Okay.
And really, it's a perfect time of the year, because the changing of the air currents is really starting to pick up now, where it's going into the fall. In the essence, as a young person growing up, I was raised within the foster care system, so I had a lot of questions. Not really having family and friends because of that system, creation has always been my first family, has always been there. And so for me and the work that I do, you know, it was like people always believe that nature and the wild was, you know, 3 hours up north, 2 hours up north. You know, everybody had to, you know, go way out of the city. And meanwhile, as a young kid, I would, you know, sit with the deer in the ravine. I'd watch Amok. I'd watch that beaver play along those banks, and even to, you know, seeing those mink that love to run around the banks. Creation is right here. It is where we are. And if we continue to think that we look beyond and way outside of ourselves, away from us to find it, we're going to continue to pave paradise. And so for me, in the style of teaching, really is coming out and sharing an experience that, you know, one would say, or, you know, as I would teach my boys, unless you get burned with fire, you're never really going to know what the experience is. And so to understand the balance, you have to be a part of it. Hopefully with the work that I do and the things that I share through those teachings, connect people in that meaningful way. Probably one of those first few memories before going into care was going fishing with my grandfather and being on the land. I remember going into care and having that that cut off. And so in that sense of that that disconnect, I spent all the hours I could trying to learn as much as I could about fish, about creation. Being brought up in another family that wasn't my own family, in that way of knowing that they weren't my family and them knowing I wasn't their family, is interesting. You know, you can say, you know, it was full of, you know, neglect and abuse, which, you know, of course came, you know, in many different forms. But if I hadn't gone through the experience I did within the foster care system of being within that colonial structure, I don't feel that where I'd be today is in a way that I can look at creation around me and see the beauty and the struggle, but also the opportunity to connect.
So is this the area that you mm-hmm. thought the nest was?
There This is the area they're always in. Mm. Yeah.
What about that? Like,
no, I mean, that's a dray. That's a squirrel's dray.
Oh, okay.
Over the last 2 years, they've been coming through, and then they've been hanging out here. We'll see if we can see somebody come along. Between 12 and 15 years ago, in Toronto here, we started what's called NKG, or Nodamaga K, which was Helpers of the Earth, which was a youth restoration group to bring elders and youth together to start taking care of the earth and the land. Never before can I recall as a young person seeing an eagle here until I think it was probably about the year after that we began ceremony and began the work down here that they began to start showing up. And so at first it was just in the fall time and then the springtime. And so to the point where even like last year there was three just north of where we were, just south of Dundas, coming through there and hanging out for it. They were here for a good 2 or 3 weeks.
Would we walk down
a little bit
more?
Yeah, we can go up.
Yeah.
It's important to notice, you know, the beings that are around us, because really, as humans, we are the last part of creation. And so thinking about, you know, those eagles, those birds, or the Benishi that are the winged, the ones in that space, we have to be mindful of how we're taking care of that that space for them, because really, and in essence, their movements are what are helping the Earth's currents of breath as well. All those wings constantly moving that airspace. Well, the Humber River, it's significant in a way that when we think of those spaces where we see those birds coming back to, is an opportunity to share that message. I think that really when we take care of the land and we look at that space, when we see those birds coming back to it, hopefully for us, can give us an opportunity to rewrite some of our stories and to share that message out with creation. As people, we often are late in seeing or witnessing what our effects are by utilizing chemicals. And so within that, you know, we think about the Humber watershed. It was once it was a food hub for all of early settlement in Western Toronto. There was a lot of harm done to the grounds, but you know, as time progresses and things heal themselves, you know, we're beginning to see really that entire shoreline and all of that ecosystem come back. So you'll see the frogs, you'll see the turtles. We're starting to see a lot more different species of fish starting to come back as well, which is beautiful. Creation only allows or gives the opportunity for life when it can. And so to see the eagles here and to see them sticking around means there is food in the watershed. We know that the water itself is hosting life enough to have such a large raptor within the space. And so between here and Center Island, you see them coming back and forth. Those teachings that Megaze, that bald eagle, shares with us as people, I think on every scale is so profound. That story goes that as people, when we become lost, there's always an opportunity to get back. When we take care of ourselves, when we take care of that fire that we have within us, and we share that that message of gratitude, love, and respect, as a people, we have a responsibility to share that message with the world that we are so lucky, so lucky to have the chance to live in a way that we can breathe. We can drink, we can play, we can laugh, we can sing, we can dance. And so Megaze is that one that reminds us to share that message with the world. no matter how hard and how tough, how difficult it can be, that the moment we get back to that sense of gratitude and appreciation, Megaze is there to share that with the world.
Alan Cawley is an urban Indigenous person of Ojibwe, Blackfoot, Cree, and mixed European ancestry. He is the founder of Living Wild in the City. This is Unreserved on CBC Radio 1, Sirius XM, US Public Radio, and Native Voice 1. I'm Rosanna Deerchild. Today, we fly with the eagles to learn about love, one of the Sacred Seven. The Seven Grandfather Teachings are something that Edna Manitouabi believes saved her life. She embarked on a journey to learn how to walk the red road with the teachings as her guide. Edna says these sacred life lessons were once silenced and kept hidden because of residential school and colonization. But then, she says, the elders woke up, and that's when she began to learn.
It was in the late 70s in Irons, Michigan, that we met Eddie Benton Benaba, and I heard the sound of the water drum. It was an incredible, beautiful, beautiful experience. I think probably because the drum had been silenced in my community, also with Kwemekong on Manitoulin Island. And so when I heard the sound of that particular, the first water drum I ever heard, the sound resonated through my whole being, every fiber, every cell in my being. I'm a residential school. I've gone through that experience at a very early age, 6 years old. And so the experiences that I went through in my young age just came surging out. And so I just made a point of saying to myself, this is something incredible. And I'm going to put this in my life. And I'm going to wear this and be a part of this drum and the teachings that it shares. The headband of the water drum has seven perfectly round stones, and each stone represents a teaching. And that's basically where I heard those grandfather teachings. And so that was, for me, a great blessing. It transformed my life, really, basically. Mm-hmm. So I have followed that sound ever since.
Wow, that is a powerful story, Edna. Thank you so much for sharing that. What are the seven sacred grandfather teachings as you have learned in the lodge?
Well, of course, they have to do with the principles of life to live by. But I would like to tell the story of one of our elders, Akio Nina, another mentor who really, really inspired me. The story that he shared with me was that it was given to a woman, the first teaching. And that teaching talks about the woman being a life giver and her connection to the land, to the earth, and that she is very much like the earth. And so when she has given birth and she puts her child to her breast, she gives the first teaching, and that is kindness. She's being kind. With kindness is love. She is sharing of herself. You're respecting, you're showing respect to that brand new spirit that has just chosen you, that has come into your life for you to guide, to give direction, and to embrace. The sharing and the honesty, those are vital. And you're teaching the child as they grow that they are a part of creation, that sense of being humble. You're not the only one, and you're a part of everything. Everything has a spirit. Everything has life. the four-leggeds, the swimmers, the crawlers, the flyers, the trees, the flowers, the medicines, the insects, that sense that we're part of all of that is that sense of humility. To be brave is another one that is crucial. You have to have that voice to be able to give guidance and to give direction and to be able to say what it is that needs to change. Mm. And of course, there is the wisdom that we, I think through life experience, we've gathered with the white hair. When we reach the winter of our lives, then there is that wisdom. And for me, it's a sense of giving back at this time in my life, a sense of reciprocity, because I've been so blessed. I'm so rich in terms of the gifts that have been given to me and have been shared with me, because these are not my words. They are the words of our elders, of the ones that have gone before us. And if I didn't have them, if they hadn't given me the encouragement and the affirmations that I needed in my youth, I wouldn't be here. I wouldn't have made it this far. Where we are today at my age, we bear the past. But for our children, our young people, they are our future. And it is our responsibility to pass on, to make sure that they have these beautiful, beautiful teachings. That's really what I look forward to, the fact that there's something that has to be given to them. And for me, it's these teachings. Mm-hmm. It's a beautiful road.
Yeah.
That a red road that was given to us by the Creator. And it's our healing. It's our transformation. It's coming home. That's the way I refer to it. We are coming home to who we are, what was originally given to us as a people. And to be able to pass that on to the young generation, the next generation, seven generations. I've got great-grandchildren. I've got a dozen great-grandchildren. And so they're my motivation. They're my incentive to keep on moving, to keep on teaching, to keep on sharing the knowledge. And I encourage them to come out on the land with me as I gather medicines and have a good relationship with the land, because we are the land. That's where we come from.
Yeah.
I remember Murray Sinclair when he was doing Truth and Reconciliation. That was one of his comments that he was shared with the people. Know who you are. Know where you come from. What is your purpose and where are you going? So if you want to know where you're going, you need to know where you come from and you need to know who you are. And what is your purpose? What is your reason for being? Everybody has that. And so it's in that spirit that I share the knowledge of those teachings. It's food for the soul. It fuels our young people. Especially at this time when things are not so great. We need to affirm them. And I think that's our biggest medicine is affirmation, encouraging our young that they do have a beautiful, beautiful life. Encourage them the way that I was encouraged. Yeah. Those are the blessings.
Mm, wonderful. You'd mentioned that you are a residential school survivor and that you had to face a lot of silencing. People didn't talk about that, you know, that kind of knowledge and that kind of cultural practice. What were some of the challenges that you had to, you know, overcome to walk that red road? I understand your father discouraged you, for example, to return to that way of life. Is that right?
That was hard. And to be rejected by your own people is very, very hard. I felt something deep inside of me
when I first heard those stories and those teachings and those songs and the sound of the drum. You want to share it with your loved ones. There's that sense that you can't hold it on to just yourself. But I was discouraged and I was told, you're just going to upset a lot of people. Just leave it alone. What do you want to know that for? It's not going to help you. And I was encouraged to go into mainstream society and go to school. It was strictly from the church, actually. They're pagan ways. They're the ways of the devil. That's what we were told. It's negative. Mm. When you hear things like that, you begin to think that. Somewhere along the way, you know that is not your truth. Mm. And so I had to find my own truth. And when I heard the drum for the first time in 1960, I knew that was my truth and that I had to follow that sound. And that's really what has saved my life, is the sound of the drum. It has brought me this far, and I still work with it. Mm. It's our way. It's my home. And I feel so blessed that I've come this far.
Yeah. And finally, Elder Edna, how do you hope that, you know, future generations, your grandchildren, your great-grandchildren, their children, will, as you said earlier, wear these teachings?
I hope they wear the grandfather teachings. That's what we need. It's not going to be easy. There's hard times that are upon us. And we need to support and embrace one another. Mm-hmm. And we need to share with one another. There has to be reciprocity. This is what I have to share at this time, to remind people of those teachings about being kind and wearing that, about sharing and about being humble, about being straight, being honest, and being brave. And have that wisdom, to have that compassion for others. We need that.
Ganaskana mitten for your time and your wisdom today.
Miigwech. Dinwe maganitak.
Elder Edna Manitowabi is the head woman for the Eastern Doorway of the Three Fires Midewiwin Lodge. She is Odawa and Ojibwe from Wikwimikong on Manitoulin Island. That's all our time on Radio Indigenous and the first of our occasional series, The Sacred Seven. This episode was produced by Kim Kasher, Rhiannon Johnson, Bridget Stringer Holden, and Elena Hudgens Lyle. You can now listen to us streaming live on the CBC News app. Just go to the local tab and press play wherever you are. You can also find and follow us wherever you get your podcasts. I'm your favorite cousin, Rosanna Deerchild, coming at you from Winnipeg in Treaty One Territory. Ganaskamitnawal, I go say.